Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Blackboard Travel Edition. Murimu here with you as we travel around the world, thanks to the Edinger Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumabipra Media 98.7 FM. If you're listening inside Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service, and a big hello to everyone there. And wherever you are listening to the show, I hope you're doing well. We've got Ganyara and Yirralum. Bumi is unavailable today. It's a little bit wet in Gimoy at the moment, and but that's a nice thing. I like the rain. And yes, apparently there's a new government in Queensland. Not that we really talk about that too much, but we might do that later on in the program. People complaining about various things there, but we just keep moving forward, and if you don't like it, you build your own world and your own nation and your own set of laws. Speaking of which, storytelling is really important. On Sky News recently, Warren Mundine was called in to comment on a documentary that looked at Captain Cook and the relationship with the Macassans. Let's take a quick look at this. We'll get some comments from our panellists.
The fact that Muslims were trading with Indigenous Australians long before Captain Cook arrived in Botany Bay. He says it's a lie that Captain Cook discovered Australia, and it's important for Muslims to know they've got a longer history here than with the Brits. Have a look at the preview for this documentary.
When a nation is founded on a lie, then how do we find a sense of belonging and connection? How do you find a place for First People, for other people who come to make this their land? When you know who you are, when you know your kinship, when you know your connection, there is a deeper truth.
So I've got a couple of questions. Was Australia founded on a lie, i.e. Captain Cook, and what's the real agenda in emphasising commonalities between Aboriginals and Muslims, especially at this point in the nation's history?
Well, we're at a very dangerous point in the nation. In fact, I was just passing through Sydney this morning when I flew back from up north, and you see the demonstrations and everything that are happening every day. Look, Cook didn't discover Australia. Let's be honest about it. You know, Dirt Hartog and all these other people come here over several hundred years, 300 or 400 years prior to Cook coming here, but they went mainly in the north and mainly on the west coast of Australia. Look, it's a great story. I like the story, you know, that here were these Macassans coming to the north, trading with Australians, with Aboriginal people at the time, and also Aboriginal people going and actually living in Sulawesi, where they come from. Nice story. In fact, I don't know what they're talking about alive, because I learned about that at school. I don't know what they're teaching kids these days.
We're just trying to undermine Australia generally, right?
Yeah.
But what about the connection between Muslims and Indigenous people? I mean, there's truth to it, but why emphasise that right now?
Yeah, well, we always were taught about it. The Muslim part was never emphasised when we were learning about it at school. It was just about this, our relationship with Southeast Asia in regard to the Macassans and that. You know, there's even talk of even Chinese coming, about 300 or 400 years before that, backwards and forwards. Now, these are great things. These are things that we should know about and even celebrate some of this stuff that, you know, we know about Dirt Hartog, we know about other Dutch people coming here, we know about the Macassans and that. But the real issue is that when Cook come here, they actually built a colony after Cook come here. And our entire nation is built on from that start. Mm. You know, it was all these other people just come and went.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at, there's this emphasis on, Muslims are fighting colonisers in Gaza, Indigenous people are fighting colonisers here. Is there this attempt to try and join the two causes together?
Well, I tell you what, everyone hasn't really studied history, because the Macassans weren't original Muslims either. They were colonised by the Muslims. You look at Spain going back to about 1,000 years ago, they were colonised by the Moors and the Muslims there. You look at North Africa. North Africa was a Christian country going back, and now it's you've got a lot of Muslims. You look at the Middle East. The Arabs come from Arabia. They didn't cut them, and they've now colonised this area. Yeah. Look, this bending and playing with the truth and facts is really problematic because, one, it's not a historical fact. You know, you'd be very, you know, they're talking about the Jews. The Jews were there for thousands of years before the Arabs were there and even thousands of years before the Muslims turned up. So I think it's about time we stop playing these games about division and that and actually start, you know, looking at it and saying, yes, this is historical fact.
Yeah.
But, you know, that does not put any lie or any attack on what the Australian nation's built on today, which is...
That's it. Warren, I want to ask you about an article that you wrote in The Australian yesterday. You said that property ownership is key to closing the gap. In it, you said, for too long now, governments have been focused on ideology-driven solutions based on an even bigger, more expensive, more centralised bureaucracy advocated by Indigenous elites from academia, the public service and government-funded organisations, which is interesting because we've just had the 12-month anniversary, of course, of the Voice defeat. So what's the solution to this then, in your view?
Well, the solution is very simple. What we've got to do is, you know, get kids to school. Mm. In fact, we had a session at Consilium on the weekend about that. Getting kids to school, getting them education to complete school so they build up their skills for a good workforce to be out there. It's about economic participation. You know, I talked about land reform there so we can get people to invest in Aboriginal communities, get these projects off the ground, like in the Beetaloo and what's happening in the Kiwi Islands and places like that, and what's happening out at Blaney and Orange.
Well.
So, you know, let's get some of these projects up where people can start running businesses and doing things. And, of course, the two big ones, and we just saw the Northern Territory election and the Queensland election where crime was the two biggest issues. And so we've got to deal with realistically about that criminal activities. And it isn't about welcome to countries by teenagers who are just, you know, been doing some sexual assault on someone. It's about really actually dealing with the issues of crime. And then, of course, what Jacinta Price and Karen Little were with the backing of Lydia Thorpe as well, about an inquiry and about where all this money's being spent.
Yeah. Warren Mundine, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
OK, so that was on Sky News. Very, very... It seemed they're trying to make a correlation there between Muslims and the colonising power of Israel the Muslims and the Aborigines here and the colonising powers of Australia, Ganyara. It seemed interesting, but at the end of the day, it's sort of a false premise, really. Australia has to decolonise whether there's... it doesn't matter if there's Muslims or not, because it's the Aboriginal people here that own this land and that have the right to self-autonomy or self-government. And at the same time, if they want to, protect Australia, which the Yidinji Nation is very much promoting.
Very much so. We've got to protect Australia. You know, it's here that it had no right to be here. I see Warren was going on about the discovery of Australia. He was looking at that from the, the everyday usage of the word discovery, as in you go and discover something, oh, look at that brand new thing I've just found. So that's discovery, but that's the wrong way of using it in this instance. Going back in the years, back to when Australia was discovered, by the way, in the 1600s, 1700s, Australia was discovered. They knew it was here. Everyone knew it was here. But the doctrine of discovery is totally different in the use of the word discovery. The doctrine of discovery was, you can go and look it up there's a legal precedence in America. I think it was Worcester versus Georgia, 1832 or 33, somewhere there. If you go look it up, it's online.
I remember that.
And it actually says in there that the doctrine of discovery was an agreement between the European nations that when they found a piece of land that was not occupied by other European nations, that they would abide by the discovery, that European nation had the first right to negotiate with the local inhabitants. They had the first right to take up land there if it was not inhabited by local people. So that's the actual doctrine of discovery. Cook knew the place was here. Everyone, the Europeans, knew it was here. So it was not discovered per se in the sense of the use of the English word discovery. It's the doctrine of discovery, and everyone must get this correct. Don't get confused with that. So Paul Warren is actually showing there, he was shown a mere lack of education and understanding of what these legal ramifications are. And look, nice bloke, Warren, but you've really got to get your facts straight before you actually make these statements. It has ramifications inside Australia. Now, I noticed with that Sky News interview, there was a push by the presenter to sort of corner Warren into a, you know, the admission of the colony. And he did get it right. Australia was come here as a colony. Now, if you go and read Resolution 1514 or 1916, I keep going on about this all the time. It's, if you read that, it must be decolonised. Any form or manifestation is acting contrary to the Charter of the UN. Any form or manifestation, and Australia is a formal manifestation, and Warren knows it. Everyone knows that it is, yet it's still here. It hasn't decolonised, so it's breaching international agreement, international law, the very charter that agrees that Australia is here. This is the problem. Then there's the ICJ hand down the other day there, not a resolution, they handed down their judicial opinion on Israel and the situation in Gaza and West Bank. And that Israel is an occupational force of that area, you know, so they got to pull back and go back to where they rightfully belong. And that is Israel itself per se, not in the West Bank or not in Gaza. So we're going to keep breaching international law. We can't just point the finger at Israel in this case. You know, Australia is one that has breached international law longer than the Israelis. So Australia needs to get its act together and get sorted out, which is what Yidinji is trying to do, you know. Who's the worst of the nations? Is it Australia or Israel? It's got to be Australia because they've been here longer. They've been doing this longer than what the Israelis have been doing there. So, Australia, you aren't no you know, golden-haired poster boy to be putting up there as a UN member state, a good international citizen, as they proclaim in their citizenship handbook. As they say there in one of the chapters, Australia is a good international citizen. No, it's not. It's a terrible international citizen because it's not abiding by the rules of the game.
Yes, the rules of the game, clearly, as you mentioned out there, was to decolonise, and, you know, with the decolonisation, the true and correct owner should be identified, and the ones who put, you know, these things in place, and, you know, if there's service agreements and treaties or formal agreements, then that's up to the tribe, and that's what we're looking at the moment. So I think that's a very important thing.
Well, you mentioned ownership there. Hang on. What does the Uluru Statement from the Heart actually mention? That the first-in-time sovereign nations, the indigenous nations that were here for the last 60,000 years, you know, give or take a day or two, it doesn't matter who they were dealing with, Macassans, the Egyptians, the Chinese, it doesn't matter. We were here first. And the nation are the true and correct owners. Just as the Yidinji nation is the owner of the territory, where all land and resources from, you know, we'll describe it in the Western world as Port Douglas to Innisfail to all the Atherton Tablelands, all that was owned by the Yidinji Nation. That means they had the right to issue title on it. And Warren comes out talking about giving them ownership within Australia. Now, Australia does not have the right to be here. It doesn't have a treaty to be here. How can Australia give ownership to the Aboriginal people when they own it? It's been recognised being owned under their own traditional laws and customs, as the Uluru Statement from the Heart said. That makes it very, very clear. I actually had an interesting phone call from a bloke on the weekend there regarding the, or yesterday I was, or sorry, on Sunday, regarding the Queensland election win by the Liberal Party. You know, the LNP won Queensland. They are the ones in power now, and the treaty will be scrapped, according to Chris Foley, that if they got in, first thing to go was the part the treaty. But Queensland can't do a treaty with us. What's it all going to be about? Where is the treaty with us? Where is the treaty? This is why Yidinji's been offering the treaty for years now, for near on a decade, to the Commonwealth of Australia, not the state of Queensland. They aren't sovereign enough. They're created subject to the Constitution of Australia. And Australia doesn't have the right to be here to say we can issue ownership to land. Because we asked the Lands Department about that going back more than a decade. Now, how'd you get the land? He said, we sort of took it, you know. So they can't prove the connection to the root title, which Yidinji hold. We can issue those to people. So what's Warren talking about giving Aboriginal people ownership of land within Australia that doesn't have the right to be here as an illegal occupant, occupying territory of another nation who has the right to be here, the ones that they reckon they discovered?
Yeah, you're laughing there, Yirrlim, obviously because it's it sounds absurd, but it's one of those things where everything seems to be the solution is inside of Australia when we're saying nations should consider looking at developing their own worlds, similar to Yidinji.
Yeah, media is difficult because the degree of bias is quite obvious, and the narrative really is remaining within Australia. That's all it is. There's only one version that comes out of the media, and that's keeping the status quo, basically. And, when it's a situation where justice has not been done and needs to be corrected, and, as this we've heard about so many times, truth-telling and so forth, we were just talking previously about some of the horrors that have happened on the Yidinji Nation during colonisation. If you're not having any investment and understanding of the history, the recent history, and then, of course, the history of tens of thousands of years, you're going to struggle to understand where this bias is in the narrative. And most people listen to this and think, it all sounds good, it all sounds great, but the reality is that the land that I live on is not mine, never was. I've got a bit of paper that's totally irrelevant, but I'm okay with that because that's the truth. If you've got any integrity, you have to be okay with the truth. There's no choice there. So, and how lucky am I to be living in in one of the nations on this, many nations on this continent that is actually set up in a documented way that, other United Nations places can understand, and that we can really negotiate and have been invited to do so with. So, special.
Yeah, it is special. And I guess we move forward now and, BRICS is adding another 13 member states to, or partners or members, rather, to its organisation. The banks in America are looking a little bit fragile. Ganyara, it's very, very... It's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the next 12 months or so in terms of how things change and how radically they'll change.
Very much there's going to be some big changes by the looks. And, I just want to go back to one point that Yirrlim just raised there was the establishment of Australia. And this is where the Sky News presenter was trying to link some sort of Muslim Quran belief to the Aboriginal belief, whatever it is. Australia was founded on the Bible. No ifs, no buts. It's in the parliament down there. It sits in the big building. It sits in the courts and all that. So to overthrow Australia with the Quran, you've got to get rid of the Bible. So you have to overwhelmingly get a referendum through that does away with that. It's not going to happen. Australia is based on a Christian belief or whatever it is. That's irrelevant to us, but, ours is based on our cosmological narrative. The one, by the way, that Justice Dowsett said, acknowledged that we do have. And our cosmological narrative is our belief, and that's what founds our nation in those old laws. So we're rooted in the ancient history of Australia, of our world, not Australia, of our world, and to which Australia is now an actor within our world. So we've got the Australian history coming in, but we're not part of their history. Remember, they were founded in the late 1700s, coming through Australia was from 1901. That's Australian history. We're not part of theirs, but they're part of ours. But... Coming back to what you were just saying regarding the money, Australia is on shaky grounds.
Mm.
The money's on shaky grounds. You mentioned some banks on shaky grounds. I've been reading a few articles about the Bank of America. They took a loss the other day or recently this year of about $100 billion, $0.1 trillion, a tenth of $1 trillion is a loss on their books. What's going to happen when they fold up or when they do a Lehman's moment? What's going to happen to the monetary system there? They're a big bank in America, huge bank. And if they fold up, and I'm reading that further to that, there has been legislation put through over there to call bail-ins, do the Cyprus moment. I know when in 2008 and 2009, when the financial world tipped over then, I think it was 40% of the Cypriot bank accounts over a certain figure got a haircut. They got a haircut of 40%. Just take 40% off the top. You had $1 million, give them $400,000 out of it. Where is it your money? When you put money in a bank, have you deposed yourself of it?
Mm.
So the money system is very, very shaky. Now, BRICS are getting together, and I've noticed out of that recent meeting they had last week, whatever it was, in Kazan.
Elaborate BRICS.
Brazil. BRICS. Oh, now we've got to go BRICS. Because it used to be Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Now they've got Iran in there. So it's BRIICS.
No, I think it's called BRICS Plus.
BRICS Plus. But yeah, you know what I mean? They're now a full-blown member, the Iranians. Now, I see they're starting to build a metal exchange in opposition to the COMEX and the LBMA. Now, COMEX is a big metal exchange in the US. LBMA, the London Bullion Market, that's the UK version of it, where they trade the precious metals. Those markets are very heavily manipulated. So BRICS said, look, we know it's manipulated by the West for a certain reason. They're using the sanctions as political weapons and tools in the West. That's the unipolar world. That's why BRICS come about. They're starting to form. And it's about half the world population, by the way, are either part of BRICS or wanting to join BRICS. So 50% of the world population. It's actually a bit more, slightly over. And they're not as rich per capita, per head, as what the Western world, the G7, are. But by geez, they're going to shake the rest of the world up.
Well, yeah, the US debt per US citizen is around $140,000 each person.
Man, woman, and child.
Exactly. That's huge. I don't think people can pay that back in their lifetime, some people, you know. So they're struggling to actually... some families are struggling to actually earn that much between the mum and the dad or whoever in the household. So it's gonna go pretty skew whiff very, very soon.
Very much so. People aren't watching what really matters in the world. Office occupancy in the US, it's under half. You know, these big office buildings where they're going to be where they're being financed by banks. How they're going to? This is what I'm saying. With a bail-in issue. The bank can take the deposited money for payment of its debts. The government used to bail them out. Okay, here's some government money, but that's not very popular where you create massive inflation by printing the money to give to the bank to bail them out of the trouble they're in. Now they've got bail-ins where they can take the money out of the bank account and put that into their own account. So what you think is your money is not yours. You've actually deposed yourself of it. And people don't believe this stuff, but it's there. It's actually legislation coming through. Australia had government guarantees of, what, $200,000 on the accounts when the world tipped over in 2008. If you had $1 million in there and you lost that and they give you back $200,000 for your $1 million, that's not very sensible to me. You know, so this is why gold is exploding at present. Gold and silver are going absolutely nuts. And why are people getting into gold? Is because they don't have any trust in the fiat currencies. I was talking to some people there a week or two ago about the CBDCs that are coming out, programmable money. It's coming. It is here. It is here today. It is now here in place. You think your credit card is it? No, it's not. CBDC is totally different thing. It's a totally different animal altogether. In Thailand, go and look it up, the Thai baht, the electronic Thai baht. The government over there is going to give probably about 50 million people an account with a digital wallet. It's got to be, so you've got to sign your name to that wallet. This is me. This is my digital identity. They're going to put some digital money in there, some 10,000 Thai baht, which is about 300 Australian dollars or 350, something like that. But it's going to be programmable. You can't buy alcohol. You can't buy tobacco. You can't gamble with it. And you've got to spend it within 4 km of where your residence is. So, you know, so now if you go into, say you live up in the north, right in the northwest, Chiang Mai. You got 10,000 baht put into your electronic Thai baht, go into your account, your digital wallet. Yet you've got to go down to Bangkok for health reasons. Your money don't work down there because you're outside the 4K limit. How does that work? So that controls you want to buy a drink of water in Bangkok. No, your money don't work. You've got to pay tax on it. This is how you get in a tax account. You've got to have all this stuff in place.
No long distance relationships.
Absolutely where the world is going. Programmable money. Mm. People don't understand. Now, this come into play beginning of August this year.
I think it's important to let the world know again that the Indian nation has its own central bank digital currency and its own digital wallet, which is, I guess, been independently reviewed as one of probably the fourth best technology in the world by the Chavanet Group. I think it's important to note that it's a little bit different here in terms of the Yidinji way. Could you explain some of those things there, Ganyara, on how the Yidinji Central Bank or the Yidinji Central Bank digital currency is a little bit different to the Thai one.
The Thai one is based on what? What is the fundamental guarantee of that money over there? Nothing. They make the digits up on a computer. Yidinji Nation has, in its wisdom of making a substance-backed currency, has given it some credibility, some substance to actually say, okay, there's, if you want to use carbon credits, for example, in this modern carbon-focused world, you have carbon credits per dollar or material-backed, you know, the water. What means the most to people? You can have gold backing of money, but can you eat gold? Can you drink gold? You need the stuff that really matters, the food, the water, the clean air. So we're backing ours on a multitude of stuff, as well as also there is a debt component from Australia that if you read Article 28 of the United Nations Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, Article 28 says give the land back to them, give them somewhere else or pay for the place if you can't do either of those. So how does Australia pay us back? They've said they can't. They've told us 7-8 years ago they can't pay the bill. They know they can't pay the bill. They know we're the underwriters, which is what gives our money, our Yidinji dollar, some credibility. Now, it gives, if we want to link it to Australia, which we're backing it, we're guaranteeing it dollar for dollar, you know, we're pegging it dollar for dollar roughly, but we're not getting Australia's permission to do that. We don't need to do that because our money has been created from a time prior to Australia being established. As Warren Mundine said earlier in the show, there was trade going on with the Macassans, with the Egyptians, with the Chinese. So they believed our substance was of value, our fish, our livestock out there was of value. So they come to trade.
Yeah, you're listening to the Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break. B-B-M. Welcome back. The oath of office is a very important part of the Yidinji government, and needless to say, we take it quite seriously here. But recently, the attention and focus was on Lydia Thorpe, not because of what she said about King Charles or said to King Charles, but about her oath of office when she took and swore allegiance to the crown. She had claimed that she had said heirs and successors, not heirs and successors. This caused a bit of a kerfuffle. Let's listen to that particular media soundbite.
The world and the country are going nuts and so many people are running from reality and the truth that I could fill the whole hour with examples of this nonsense and hypocrisy. But let me run through a few at the top of the program tonight. Let's start with Senator Lydia Thorpe. Yeah, I know we've already heard too much from her and we've spoken too much about her, but when it comes to whether or not she remains in the Senate, whether or not she made her oath of allegiance properly, or whether she has broken it, this is important stuff. And I'll show you all the bizarre and relevant comments tonight. Yesterday, with calls for her to resign from Parliament resounding around the country, Thorpe told the ABC she hadn't really made the oath back in 2022.
I don't remember doing that. And I swore allegiance to the Queen's heirs. If you listen close enough, it wasn't her heirs, it was her heirs that I was giving my allegiance to. And now that, you know, they're no longer here, I don't know where that stands. But
right, so what's the significance of that?
No, I'm not giving up my job. I'm not resigning.
Pretty embarrassing stuff, isn't it? She's like a toddler closing her eyes and covering her ears and screaming. But sure enough, she did say heirs.
True allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law.
I reckon most of us would put that down to mispronunciation. But not content with this idiocy, Thorpe also objected to the whole practice.
I'm not an expert on the colonial laws. The only experience I've had with colonial laws is the violence of them. And the violence of pledging allegiance to the oppressor is absolutely out of date and absolutely a disgusting thing to make someone do.
Of course, there's an easy way to fix all this. If she hates the system so much, quit Parliament and give up the pay and perks worth upwards of $300,000 a year. And there are plenty of people gunning for her. Pauline Hanson told us last night that she's keen to get rid of Thorpe from the Senate.
I'm actually going to chase up and refer her to the High Court. I'm going to look at this procedure. She admits that she never gave the oath of allegiance, which she should under Section 42 of the Australian Constitution. If not, we refer her under the new laws passed by the privileges.
And coalition MPs have been calling for a close look at whether Thorpe could be expelled. Perhaps it was fear of losing her pay, platform and privileges for the next 3.5 years. Who knows? But something prompted the senator to change her tune entirely when she appeared on Sky News this morning.
Now, forgive me for not being, my English grammar isn't as good as others, and I spoke what I read, so I misspoke. And to have this country question, or particularly, you know, people like Dutton and other senators from his party, for them to question my legitimacy in this job is an insult, and they can't get rid of me.
Yeah, and for once in her life, it seems Thorpe might be correct. They probably can't get rid of her. The nation is stuck with her. We just have to wait for her term to expire in 3.5 years' time. Wouldn't it be nice if we could ignore her until then?
Yeah, Ganyara, you wanted to comment on that because, the Bible says by your words you'll be justified, by your words you'll be condemned.
Yeah, you'll be hung by the words of your mouth. Let's just put it very simple and blunt. But King Charles, by the way, Charles that bloke, that dude walking around with the suit on, he has at least 15 personalities that he can be seen through. And they're the kings of each of these Commonwealth nations. And Australia is one. He's the King of Australia. I'm not going to argue about that. He is the King of Australia. The position that he holds here, when he comes here, he is the King of Australia. Now, if he can hold all these personalities, maybe that woman called Lydia, maybe she can hold multiple personalities as well. Maybe she can hold a personality inside Australia called Senator Thorpe, and she's holding an office there where she gets good money. They say she's on $250,000 a year, $250,000 a year for 6 years. She gets $1.5 million. That's Senator Thorpe's name. But that same woman can hold another legal identity in the nation that was here first, the one that doesn't have a treaty with Australia, by the way. So when she made she made an oath. Begrudgingly, she made an oath, or an affirmation it was at the time, to the Senate to bear true allegiance to the King and his heirs, or the Queen and her heirs at the time, and Charles is the heir, so she took full allegiance as Senator Thorpe, not as the Aboriginal woman, Thorpe did. So this is the prime difference. She should just say, yep, that Senator Thorpe done that. No ifs, no buts about it. But now I'm back in the other suit where Charlie can leave the UK as the King of the UK and come here as the King of Australia. She can go back and say, no, now hang on a sec. Me in my Aboriginal capacity, I didn't swear any allegiance to you. I really didn't. And you don't have a deal with our mob. You don't. And if you don't have a deal with our mob, they can't give you a treaty. You've got to give them one.
Does she have to, like in her tribal capacity, does she have to have done what Yidinji government has done and created the documents and so forth to be able to claim that?
It was an unwritten law, like the unwritten constitution of the UK. But we've done ours on purpose, the way we wrote it, so that the rest of the world can see it. You know, when they commissioned the expert group to go forward and determine what the Aboriginals want, and it resulted in the Uluru Statement from the Heart, they picked out the best constitutional experts they could find. And they went forward, and there was Liebler, and there was Davis, and all of them crew were there. There was a whole number of Nastasia Stott Despoja, they were everywhere. And they come back and said the Aboriginals hold sovereignty. They're the first and true owners of the place, sovereignty unceded, unextinguished. So there must be a nation. And they did call us nations. They were the first sovereign nations on this country. So they are there as a nation. So we can have unwritten documents. But how does the world see it? We've done ours in a written form, so we can hand ours out in English, by the way, not in Yidin, in English, so they can see it and read it and understand it and say, yes, just as you, as the education minister, took an oath of office, there it is, written out in English, so they can see that that bloke sitting there has taken an oath of office in that government.
No, I said hairs.
Ah, so now you're not legit. Now you're acting falsely, because she should be saying, yeah, I took that oath as Sandra Thorpe, not as the Aboriginal woman of her lot. Totally different.
Yeah, I think it's quite quite obvious for those on this side from the tribal point of view anyway. The most interesting thing now is what kind of form does Australia take if there's talk about decolonisation or, let's say, independence? I know that one of the Caribbean nations have removed the king of, you know, Charles as their boss. And I can't remember if it's Bermuda or Bahamas or one of those two, but somewhere over there. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but ultimately they're going to have to deal with us.
Manifestation or form of colonialism. Doesn't matter if it's a republic, which is what... Apparently that was a bit of the story why King Charles come out, was to also discuss... Not only was he going to the Samoan, you know, the Chogum show there, but he was also coming out, they were discussing the removal of the monarchy from the crown from the Commonwealth of Australia. So it's going to become a republic. That's what they're looking at. It's irrelevant. It was us, always still here, always have been here, always will be here. Then there was the British. And that manifested into the Commonwealth of Australia, which was still under a colony status. It was still, you know, the colonies united to form the Federation, but it's still a formal manifestation of the original colonial settlement that took place. That now has removed the King of the UK and put the King of Australia in place, or the Queen of the UK and put the Queen of Australia, which now has become the heir of King of Australia. So it's been modified into this, but it's still a manifestation of the original group that come here in the late 1700s. So if they take the royal family out, take King Charles out, and they become a republic, it's still a manifestation or a form of whatever was here first. So it's just moving along, but they have to deal with the original people whose sovereignty is unceded and unextinguished.
Yes, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We've got Yirrkala and Gunyara in the studio. Bumi can't make it today, but that's okay. We'll catch him next week. I'm looking at the Queensland election now, and the Northern Territory one were heavily focused on overcoming crime and dealing with youth crime and all that kind of stuff. And you just can't help but think that it's like a broken record. Anything that leads to children going into detention, it's really a business racket, because whoever's building these prisons and institutions, detention centres, are the ones making money. If you talk to people in the know to hold a prisoner inside or someone, it costs quite a bit of money. Why don't you just pay them to stay out of jail? I mean, this is a logical question.
What people don't realise is what a prison really is. A prison is a warehouse for bodies, for humans. That's all it is. If you have a look at the prison, it's actually better than the aged care facilities. Why is that? Why is it a warehouse for body? Because what they do, when you do a serious crime, they actually remove your ability to use a legal identity. So they take their personality off you, the person, by the way, which is what King Charles is, King of Australia, not Charlie the bloke, not Lydia the woman, but, you know, Sandra Thorpe. That's the personality that you are seen legally through in that world. So they remove the ability for you to interact with that world and participate in there through their legal identity. So they take it off you. Any more than 1 year in jail, they take that off you. So you can't vote and all that sort of jazz. But the average human aren't seeing this. And, you know, as you said, it is a business where there's big money involved. Maybe it's also a form of getting the people away from their ability to go and create the legal identity that you can be seen through as the owners of the nation, as of the world, of where your nation belongs. You know, as the original sovereign nation who owns the place pursuant to laws and customs that are not of Australian or British origin. Maybe they're trying to remove people away from their connection to country. Maybe this is why they're going to say adult time, adult crime, you know. And Australia is wrong. Queensland is wrong with this. They're very, very wrong, because they may be committing genocide by not educating the kids properly, that if you go back to your true connection, you will be dealt with under tribal legislation or Yidinji legislation, for example, here, at a government level, also as a tribal level, because tribal level is deadly serious. And I mean literally deadly because there is capital and corporal punishment at that level. If you want to go back to the tribe and do away with all the rest, face the capital crime, that the punishment that comes for a serious crime. But it's education. It's all about education. Has anyone told these kids? Has anyone told, you know, the incoming now of, Liberal Party of Queensland that they still don't have a treaty and that they may be exceeding their authority by forcing it on the kids of these original nations?
Yeah, it's a good question. The thing that I guess is comes to mind is justice reinvestment, or, you know, these are the conversations that are being had inside of Australia, let's say, where you'd have other institutions or facilities that would help curb these things. But once again, Yirrkala, I think these have to be based and grounded in cultural excellence, and that can has to be in some sort of form of a tribal model. We talk about that from an education point of view. We talk about that from most things, that there has to be this cultural sphere that is the backbone of the society to either reinforce the tribal message and the law that Gunyara is talking about, or you just get held up in some sort of derivative post-colonial tea club facility, and you're just residing there. You're not doing much.
Yeah, I'm not a big tea drinker. You've hit it on the head. You know, look what we're talking about here. We're talking about matters of economy and the application of these different factors. And the current world sees us in a situation where the confusion has led to the state that we're in. The confusion being that, you know, if you look traditionally at the wisdom and the operations of the social model in Yidinji and many other, I can just about say all the other nations in this continent anyway, that when it came to the economy, it was about community. It was about how we work together. It wasn't about dog-eat-dog or getting on top of each other or having the most money or, as you're sort of pointing out, it's a really strange thought that America's debt is $140,000, $140,000 per citizen. And, you know, my first thought when I hear something like that is, well, some people earn more than that in a week, and some people wouldn't learn that much in a lifetime. And that's where that disparity never happened here in the Yidinji Nation, because it was about community. It was about when it came to the matters of supplying the basic needs for every human being, the physical needs that we need to live each day, it was shared evenly and it was worked as a community to supply it. And this is what has to be applied to the economic sphere of the world. And this is what Yidinji brings, is an understanding that if the world has misused this concept, you know, this so-called theory that Darwin, they've adopted, you know, dog eat dog and all this sort of thing of what they believe is the animal world, which is really miscued anyway. Any individuality is really a part of the creative side of our human beings. That's what it's about. You know, it's the cultural world. Part of our cultural world, as you just said, is about our ability to be individuals and to create differently and to think differently. And that belongs to the cultural world. That is one of the aspects of what happens in cultural activity. And that's why sometimes you will see the education model, or at least in Yidinji's model anyway, that is what's promoted, is the ability for children to think for themselves and be individuals in that area. So it's a matter of getting things around the right way.
One of the most frustrating things for me is that people will talk to me recently and say, oh, and I said, look, it doesn't really matter who's in party, you know, who's in control of the government. It's not Yidinji, for example. They'll say, oh, this mob is worse than the other mob, and you know, it really has done a good job in blurring what the real task at hand, and that is Indigenous self-autonomy. Gunyara, it's very easy for people to fall back into that Australian domestic situation, when really, once you step outside of that, you can see that it's the same machine that wants to either lock up people or not lock them up, but educate them in how to be a great Australian. And fair enough, that's Australia. I don't have necessarily a problem with that. But I think the civics education and Australians should be at the same time be aware of the tribal societies and those who have formed government, for example, and their right to do so, and that Australians should be aware of that at least on a bit more of a level than it is now, because it's not even touching the surface.
This is where the world is going a bit skew-whiff, in my opinion. You know, one man's terrorist group is another man's freedom-fighting group. This is what we've got to be so careful of now. Australia, Commonwealth of Australia, has listed certain entities as terrorist entities. Fair enough, they may or may not be. I don't know. I'm not going to go into that. But when you look at from the other side, maybe they're the freedom fighters of the other side, so the other side wouldn't have them listed as terrorist groups, you know. So around the world, you know, the BRICS nations may list Australia as a terrorist nation. I don't know. But when we look back from the Australian side, are they? Yes or no, we don't know. So we're not going to... But that's what I'm saying. You've got to be very careful how you look at the world. So if you're dingy, A is trying to... You know, if we're trying to break away from Australia, are we a terrorist group? Yes or no? Australia may think so. Some inside Australia may think so. But it's... You know, are we? No, we're trying to defend our territory, do our every right to do what Australia has to do for look after Australia, to protect Australia. But we're coming along and we're taking the high moral ground here. We're trying to protect Australia from itself. You know, they can't say that Yidinji is a terrorist group. And we're trying to come along to protect it and remedy the past, the issue that it's got, you know, with occupying our territory unlawfully and illegally. Where is the legal document that allows Australia to be here?
Yeah, and I'm sure the business community would be interested in security of tenure. I'm sure that the citizen would be interested in the security of persona and the settlement and the securitisation for the future here, especially in what we mentioned earlier in the program, this geopolitical instability that is to come, because that is... The golden offer from the Yidinji Nation. We have no obligation to protect Australia or any allegiance to the Australian Crown. We have an allegiance. We've made an allegiance to protect the Yidinji Crown, for example. But in the elders' wisdom, they want to look after everything, including persons and things on their territory, which is their property.
If you look up belligerent occupation, just go and find the legal definition of belligerent occupation, which is what is going on here. You know, an occupation is where you're seizing someone else's territory without consent and without the exchange of sovereignty, by the way, which is why they say sovereignty is unceded. It's a belligerent occupation, and that means that those who are occupied owe no oath of allegiance to the occupant. We don't owe Australia anything, not in the slightest. We've got every right to defend ourselves from the occupant. We've got every right under international law to push Australia back out. We don't want to do that. We're coming along saying, look, we want to continue the underwriting. We want to continue for Australia to be here, get proper consent to be here, especially in this, like you said, there's this turmoil that's going on at present globally. There's some massive changes coming. If we're not already in a world war, we're not far off it, in my opinion. We're getting very close. So we're trying to offer stability to Australia and the Australian way of life. Not that we want to be Australian or have the Australian way of life, because we've got our way of life. It's always been here. But we want Australia to be here properly, legally. We've made it known to a huge number of senators going back years now, and they have said, yeah, look, yous are right. There has been a number of academia say, yep, yous are right. But Australia is just at this stage... doesn't know what to do with it. How do they, in such a unstable time, say, oh, no, the Aboriginal peoples possess the right to hear, and we've got to talk to them and we've got to do a deal with them, because if they can do a deal with us, maybe China might trump them or Venezuela may trump them or Canada may, and come in early and say, OK, we'll do a deal with you that's better than Australia's.
Yeah, I mean, these are things that have been conveyed to people like Caroline Kennedy, the US ambassador to Australia, when she visited Gimoy earlier this year or late last year. I think it's really important to know that the Yidinji Nation is a friendly nation. We have received that in writing from various UN member states. We have also conveyed to the UN member states, including members of the Security Council, that we are here to protect Australia. Not for one Australian dollar, mind you. And this is what I'm saying. It's really important in Yirrkala that people understand that. This is not about snatching backyards and things like that you hear when Mabo first came out in Native Title. Are they going to steal your backyard and all that kind of trash? We're doing it for not one Australian dollar here. It really is a different way of doing business.
Well, it's a traditional way of doing business because it's not about, you know, when it comes to things to do with land, nobody owns the land. It's something that you're responsible for. Your Yidinji are the unceded primary caretakers of this land and always will be. It's about how can we work together to produce enough for everybody so everybody can live at a level that everybody should be on our nation. So if it's something that people are hearing and they're not understanding why, how is it we're doing this not for money? Because when it comes to money, money is a tool of the economy. The economy is a community effort, not an individual effort. And that's where the world's sort of struggling with that thought that Yidinji could do this from that perspective.
Yeah, you're listening to Blackhawk Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break with some final comments. Some final comments. Yirrkala, we'll head off with you first and then Ganyara.
Yeah, once again, yeah, that's why we're on the show, is to share with everybody that there is a better way. There is one that is absolutely wrapped in the wisdom of tens of thousands of years of a society that has been and will continue to be successful, and we're here to share it with the world. So look forward to communicating with everybody.
Ganyara.
Yeah, look, when the colony was first established, they basically said the Aboriginal people were that uncivilised. They were little more than monkeys, you know. They were just human animals. And that, as a human animal, that would have given them the right to dispose of the human animal, by the way. And I'll use it. We're not saying we are. We were never human animals. We were a very civilised nation. And we do not treat the Australians, by the way. Now, I'll say that. We've never treated the Australians as human animals the other way around. We've never done the reciprocal on them. We're all humans on this place together. We're all sitting on this little ball, this little pale blue dot in space. We're all there together, and we're all humans. We're all humans together at the same level, which is why I keep saying, don't mix the worlds up. We're all humans. We're all together. We're all of the same equal stature. Don't consider us lower than that. We're not human animals. As Isaac said, you know, can't cast an intelligent vote. They're not smart enough to be part of Australia. We don't want them in here. No more. We want Australia to be here. We're going to do the opposite. We want Australia to be here. We want the humans to be all equal, the same. Fair go. Everyone gets to live on the place and share the joint equally.
Yeah, I guess that's, one of the things that has resonated strongly from this office is that there needs to be that ability to enter into contract equally. There needs to be that restitution and all that kind of things, and justice and truth. But it has to be done the Yidinji way because that's the way that it's always been done here. I think the nations now to look at how they can treaty with each other, and if Australia comes in at a later picture, then so be it. But I think the nations now really should start at doing business face-to-face and persona to persona through their legal entities. I think that's going to be a very important procedure, one that's going to take a little bit, but it'll get there and it's already started. One of the other things too, I think, is that Australians themselves must look at this for themselves. It is for them to decide really. They can get a Yidinji persona, they can use the Australian one if they want, or if they're on Birriggubba territory or wherever they are, really investigate what law is there still.